Do you like meteorites? Looking towards the outer space and thinking of the unknown. What's the story behind? Where do meteorites come from? What's our relationship with them? According to artists Guillermo Faivovich and Nicholas Goldberg, everyone loves meteorites. Faivovich and Goldberg have been invited by Simon Starling to present their project A Guide to Campo del Cielo at Fondazione Merce in Turin on the occasion of Starling's exhibition The Inaccessible Poem. On the same occasion, we met the two Argentinian artists, and here is the outcome of our conversation.
I'm Guillermo Faivovich.
And I'm Nicholas Goldberg.
We work together in this project called A Guide to Campo del Cielo, that it's about this meteorite fall that happened in northeast Argentina 4,000 years ago. And it was, there was people living there already at that time. It was quite a big fall, 840-ton asteroid breaking into pieces and shattering all this area. It's like 100 kilometer by 3 that got scattered by these rocks. And since then, these meteorites were cultivating humans. Everyone going there has their own opinion of what these big chunks of iron are. Especially it's a very, very flat area with no bigger mineral than the sand. So it's very easy to realize that these big chunks of iron are something special. Actually, the originary people from there, they called the area Campo del Cielo, which means field of the sky. So even if the Spaniards didn't pick up this name as a probable cause of what these big chunks of iron means, it's clear that the people that saw the meteorite fall knew exactly where it came from. We got interested in this site. We went there to see what was going on. And very as soon as we jumped into the car, we knew that it was a story with a beginning, but with no clue what it was going to take us. We always work with very simple objectives. Like at that moment, we jumped into a car to make this 1400 kilometer trip to the field, to the Campo del Cielo, and we had a list of meteorites that were in institutions in the way, and we wanted to check if they were there, like to take pictures, to talk with the people that was in these institutions, so we would be able to do like a first work that was to put together a census of where the meteorites are. And since then we were having like simple goals that it was always keeping it simple and trying to set the record straight, because it's a very old story with a lot of histories around that changed like the data. So we wanted to set the record straight about like simple things.
And also, as we began to delve into the story and navigate the Campo del Cielo history, Guillermo was mentioning, you know, this happened about 4,000 years ago, and the location, the site was already inhabited. And since then, there's been this sense of pilgrimage in different sets of time. We started to go deeper. It sort of became clear that it was this this case study on these objects, on these extraterrestrial objects, where we could sort of have a cross-section of different moments of man and different tools of interpretation of what is this thing that you have in front of you. For the Indians, the original inhabitants, they were talking about the sky that was set on fire. They had their own relationship with these meteorites. And then with the arrival of the Spaniards, that opened an entirely new era of interpretation of that same object as they were looking for metals. The notion of a meteorite was not known at that time in the 1500s.
So they were looking under the ground to see where it was coming from, and they couldn't really understand that they were coming from the sky. And then in the 20s, for instance, we have this part of the story that we're doing at Mertz, that is sort of from that moment of the first surveys, like a geological scientific survey of the region. And then you have the arrival of modern science, like from the 60s till today, where they understand that this is coming from outer space. And as all of this research began to surface, our objectives became a little bit more clear. Like, it wasn't ourselves projecting onto this place what we wanted to do, but sort of functioning as facilitators or mediums of these histories, of these stories. Like, what does this story need? So with El Taco, the show that we presented at Porticus, we came upon this during this stage of census, when we were going through all the institutions that held Campo del Cielo meteorites that had been removed from the region and located in collections, we found outside the Buenos Aires Planetarium a half, like a stone that was on a concrete-like base on the side, really as an unimportant specimen. It was just lying on the floor. It was this sort of amorphous shape with a very like sharp cut. So when we came across it, it had a small plaque, and it announced that it was a Campo del Cielo meteorite. It had a name, and it didn't have any more information. So we walked into the planetarium asking, can you tell us about this specimen? What do you want to know? And where's the other half? We asked. And they looked at us and just were bewildered, like, what other half? What are you talking about? They felt like we were applying some pressure, or they really didn't even know who we were. So we researched this institution. They had no paperwork, whatever. The only thing that was confirming the existence of this thing was itself. There was no like dominion, like nobody knew how it arrived there. And that instigated a huge amount of legwork involved with that to trace back its history. Like, we knew in the 60s it had been found, and so we started digging into its history, and we ended up finding the other half in the USA in a storage from the Smithsonian. So when we came across the other half, at that moment we were just working. We didn't really know what we were going, how that was going to materialize. But as soon as we saw the other half, it became very clear that we needed to put it back together.
How did you put together the two pieces of the meteorite El Taco, and do you see your work as somehow political?
It's something that's on the table. It's like I was saying before, I don't feel that we could describe ourselves as like political in our interest, but these are the things that we need to deal with. So paying attention to these issues is something that we are aware of, with El Taco, very especially, because this story is about dominion in the end. It's about who owns what. It's about this forgotten history of that it involves three countries, three different idiosyncrasies. How do people deal with things? How do like different cultures deal with like one same object? So it does get political. For sure.
A split meteorite, El Taco, a book produced by the upcoming Documenta that present your research. How did you present the work at Porticus?
Our work, it's a very open work. So people has the opportunity to come up with their own interpretations. We don't like to close things. Like, we like to lay the cards over the table and people, we like people like putting together. And I don't know, it was very amazing to see people around the work that done in Porticus. Like, there was so many different kind of people approaching to it. They were attracted by the fact that there was a meat right there. Everybody loves meat rights. But then in the way we work, we left everything open there. There was just two halves of a meat right with no text, no explanation. It wasn't didactic. It was just the opportunity for people to go there and to see what they could get to feel. And it was really great to stand like in a corner and to see people interacting. Like, for example, people from the art world usually saw the meteorite as a sculpture and having a distance with the meteorite. And then kids just run into the room and hug the meteorite or step over. We heard about new age groups of people or what, just going there and being around the meteorite, holding their hands, and there was other people like hitting the meteorites, and everybody had the chance to do what they felt they had to. And that was, I think, the best that at least I got from letting people do what they felt they had.
Yeah, and also this has to do with our search for trying not to bias the spectators, leaving he was talking about this sort of openness that we wanted to work with, because this could have been such a museological sort of show. The book comprises so much imagery that we've collected and found, and it's like stitching together something that's been apart for so long. So the act of stitching together these two halves was sort of replicated in the book with stitching together its history. So it became pretty clear that we wanted to keep it simple and not sort of bias the spectator to understand immediately that these halves are this thing and this comes. It's a stone from outer space that's completely amorphous. It's like cosmic, already made, and it's man that cut it across. And this was something that you could feel, at least we could feel, working around it for so many years with this half. And then I think we also liked this idea because there wasn't anything on the walls, there weren't no papers, but upstairs in this sort of mid-level terrace where the Porticus has the bookstore, we had the books, and there was this sort of takeaway piece that explained what you were looking at. So if people would really want to look for some answers, they could find them. It wasn't that complex of an operation. And a lot of people were very happy with that, in terms of giving us some feedback on it. The fact that they weren't immediately... The Porticus had just the banner that said Meteorite El Taco, and that was it.
Let's take a step back and again talk about how did you take on your researches. A great part of your work deals with archival and lost archival materials. How did you deal with the institutions and the places you recovered the materials from?
It's very interesting how, institutions, there's always people behind. When we are two individuals, we are artists, and we're always talking like we are people. But when you talk to an institution, even if there's someone else in the other side of the phone or in front of you, it's the institution you are talking with. And then sometimes you have the chance to jump that barrier and to talk to someone that gets involved. Sometimes people get involved in a negative way, and sometimes they get involved in a very positive way. And that's what happened to us with the source of the material that we're using for this Mertz piece. That is a set of photographs that were published in 1926 out of this expedition to the site of Campo del Cielo, where this geologist went there to verify if this private endeavor found this missing meteorite. There was a prize for whoever found this meteorite, So there was these people claiming that they did. So the state sent this mission with this geologist to verify if it was true or not. In this mission, there was a set of 25 pictures, or at least is what we got to find at the end of the road, 25 big format pictures. And they were published in this scientific publication 3 years later, where it's very interesting because this geologist, he says that he can't say that the meteorite exists because it's not there, as these people said. But he get interested in these holes that were there. He says that he's wondering if these holes could be the result of the impact of this meteorite. He says that he has no clues to say that they were made by the meteorites. But what is very interesting is that he addressed a question that very short after it was answered, like, yes, those are craters, they are not holes. When we saw the publication first, we said, okay, where's the pictures? Because it's a 1926 publication where the pictures are beautiful, but the quality is very low. We began looking for these plaques, asking for the people there, to the institution. It's an institution with no archives, so they said there's nothing. Those photos are gone. Just you have the book, that's all. So we found somebody that got interested in our work and kept the question to himself. It's Diego Fernandez. So one day he called us and said, I found the negatives. I found the negatives, and also I found the 5,000 plague archive lost in a warehouse. Yeah, it was amazing, because along with our question came like a huge resource of unique pictures of our country that it was lost. And now there's an archive, like he founded an archive, and now he's like the director of this archive, so.
And we're actually quoting that archive for the usage of these images. So it's a very like elliptic sort of fabrication, I guess. I mean, it's not like we're responsible for the birth of that archive, but in some sense, you know, we participated in that. So
we raised the question. We like the moment that we get to know that we have a question. Where's the other half of the meteorite? So when it's a very simple question, we had to travel a lot to get to see it. We had to send a lot of emails to get the attention of people that it's really very important people, like the curator of meteorites of the Smithsonian. That guy, he works in NASA with the rovers in Mars. He really has no time to lose. And to be able to capture his attention with only one question is really like something that we're very happy about it.
Last, how did you meet Simon Starling and got involved into each other's project? He's the main contributor in your book, A Guide to Campo del Cielo.
Well, it was almost by chance that we met Simon, and that Simon knew about our work. I went to one lecture of him at the Städelschule in Frankfurt, and I really liked his lecture, and then I went with these friends and Simon to have a drink, and somebody told Simon, like, he's from Argentina, he works with meteorites, and he got interested. in that moment. It was a very quick conversation. And then we exchanged emails, and he asked me to give a talk at his class that it never happened. But he told me, why don't we have a moment and talk about it? It was a little bit that way. And then when the Porticus show came as a possibility, it was clear that Simon was involved, and we knew that we wanted to do a book that gave us the opportunity to put all the research in so we could like do the show we wanted. It was a great experience, because it wasn't us hosting him. We were like doing our job, we were like going to places, talking to people, and he was with us, and he was like part of like this expedition that one more, it was like the seventh expedition that we did.
Yeah, he came down to observe our practice and sort of accompany us along the route for the sort of the finishing touches for El Taco. And we used that opportunity as a sort of a platform to discuss about our work and what we were doing. And that was obviously inserted into the book at the end as a sort of a gateway into what this project was about. And after that, of course, you know, like, it wasn't by chance that it was Simon Starling. I mean, when Simon met Guillermo and heard about our work, some affinity sort of surfaced. So there are certain things where our work, or at least when we see each other's work, where you can identify certain problematics that are in action, or in motion, or that have to do with histories and constellations of stories, and how do you deal with this practice, I guess. We were invited with Guillermo to MIT for this lecture series based upon the notion of artistic research. And that's a label that we had never thought about ourselves. So, you know, when you start to sort of understand how people are reading your work, and it's also like easier to understand also why you sort of have this affinity with other artists. But, you know, the work is obviously very different, but there are certain points where there's like a dialogue that can occur. In this show, it was very interesting because Simon was interested. He was interested in this painting of the story of the meteorite that was lost, and sort of the operation that we did on this lost painting that we decided to redo. And then we told, because the painting is now touring in another group show, so we said, Simon, the painting is not available, but we sort of know what we want to do. He told us about these photographs from Naismith and Carpenter that are these interpretations of the craters on the moon. So then our story involved the interpretations of these geologists of these pits that weren't even like understood as craters. So, you know, it's like, I guess it was nice too to be operating. That felt like connection in some sense. And it felt that it was going to work pretty well for the show. Me personally, I would say that I sort of feel that Simon looked into Mertz's work looking for some sort of dialogue within his own work. And I feel the selection of Mario Mertz's work are very built to dialogue. What's going on here is there's an interpretation occurring. Like, there's this idea of interpretation occurring in the show. So having Simon come into Mertz and producing this interpretation of pulling out these pieces from Mertz's catalog of works is a way to like trigger something else, something new. And that's where I feel maybe like some connection, transgenerational connection, can occur. Thank you.
This interview is produced by Radio Papesse. If you want to support Radio Papesse, go to radiopapesse.org/sostieni. radiopapesse.org